A lot of people seem to focus these days on what they deserve. We see it all the time in advertising. We see it reinforced in Facebook posts. And it always seems to be from the point of view that we deserve more. I'm going to make myself sound old. Back in my day, we would probably hear it more from the other side that someone got what they deserved. It was usually a payback for something that they had done that they shouldn't have been doing. But aren't we set up to have these feelings that we deserve more than maybe we really do? For example, here in America, we've been told so many times that we think it's true that the American dream is to own your own home. Is that the American dream? Sounds like a commercial from realtors, banks, and mortgage companies to me. But it does show that if you say something over and over, that it will sink in. And now someone who lives in an apartment can often feel like they deserve their own home, even if they don't have the means to pay for it. Anytime you see advertising, you deserve to have the latest smartphone. You deserve to have the latest fashions. You deserve to treat yourself to a meal at that restaurant and to drive that really cool new car. You deserve all those things. Today especially, we see college graduates with student loans in the six digits, and they're struggling to find jobs in their field of study, but refusing to take what work they can get because they deserve more. Maybe. But it doesn't change reality, does it? See, many of us who have been in the workplace for a long time, we've seen this scenario play out. The company hires a young person straight out of college, and they come in thinking that they should run the whole place. See, they're armed with the latest education, the latest knowledge. Well, who else could be better qualified? I'm being a little facetious here. It's usually not quite that much out in the open. Usually it's a little more passive-aggressive. But today we're going to look at the story of a man who could argue that he deserved more than he got, at least for a while. We're going to look at some of the lessons from his life, lessons that each of us need to take into account in our lives. And if you would like a title for today's sermon, it is Joseph, Rise of a Leader. Joseph, Rise of a Leader. So to begin, let's consider a question that has been debated for decades among those who study leadership. And the question is this: are great leaders born, or are they made? Are they born or made? Now, most people believe that great leaders are born. See, people assume that leaders come into the world with a natural capacity to lead and that everyone else doesn't and that there's not much you can do about it. Well, what do you think? Well, we begin today in Genesis 37. This is where we first meet Joseph. Genesis 37. And at the beginning of chapter 37 in Genesis, we first meet Joseph as a 17-year-old, working in the fields with his older brothers, and at the time he's the youngest by quite a bit. The chronology is a little hard to really nail down, but it looks like Reuben, the eldest of Jacob's sons, was probably in his early 40s by this time, and Joseph was likely younger by several years than even the youngest of his elder brothers. So let's keep that in mind as we begin reading. Genesis 37 in verse 1, it says, "Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger in the land of Canaan." This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. This is not a very auspicious start to our story, is it? If someone is a born leader, then they can't help but lead in whatever capacity they're in, can they? If you're to subscribe to this way of thinking, it is who they are. But we sure don't see anybody wanting to follow Joseph at this point, do we? Now, we can read some observations into what we just read here. Now, Joseph very well could have been a tattletale. Bringing a bad report of some of his brothers back to Jacob. Now, we aren't told here if something serious was seriously wrong was going on, or if Joseph was just simply trying to get them into trouble. And no, this is not to excuse whatever his brothers were doing, but anyone with parents of more than one child know that sometimes you just got to let the kids work it out amongst themselves. Mom and dad don't need to be involved in every little problem. In verses 3 and 4, though, we see that jealousy of Joseph was a big problem within the family because Jacob played favorites. And it kind of looks like Joseph knew it. And he would lord it over his brothers' heads to the point that they could not speak peaceably to him. So we come back to the question. Great leaders, are they born or are they made? Well, the research on leadership tells us that the answer is yes. There are born leaders, but they're rather rare. See, these are the people that they are hardwired to achieve and to bring other people along that path of achievement with them. And there are some people, they can be a decent or a good leader, but they're never going to be able to be a great leader. They just simply don't have the skills or the aptitude for it, no matter how hard they try. There's about 10 to 15% of people at each end. Now, for those people that know about statistics, what I'm describing here is what's called a bell curve. It looks like a bell. 10 to 15%, just not going to make it as a great leader, no matter what you try. You might get good, you might get decent. Some people are going to be born with the tools to be great leaders. Now, 70 to 80% of the people are in the middle. Okay? And here's the fact of the matter. Most people who start out with just a small amount of innate leadership capability can become very good or even great leaders. And that's good news for us. Because the chances are that you're somewhere in the middle. And what we find is that one-third of your leadership effectiveness comes from being born with the characteristics of a leader. And the other two-thirds is learning and development. Great leaders are born and made. But the majority is on the made side of the equation. That's a good thing for Joseph and for us. Because here's what you need to understand. Every single one of us here needs to be a leader. Now, there's a book I read recently while I was putting this sermon together called You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader. And there's a passage that speaks to this idea. The author, Mark Sanborn, writes, "Many suffer from the misconception that leadership is about large, sweeping acts of history. Abraham Lincoln and the Emancipation Proclamation. Churchill and his blood, sweat, and tears speech during the Second World War. Yes, those history-making events certainly marked extraordinary acts of leadership and courage. But what we don't always realize is that each of our daily actions and efforts have significant impact as well. Rosa Parks had no idea of the impact she would have on history when she refused to give up her seat to a white man on that bus in Montgomery, Alabama. Yet, her actions and courage changed the course of our nation's history. When you do your job, any job, with initiative and determination to make a positive difference, you become a leader." So that leads us into the first lesson that we can learn from Joseph's life and experiences. Before you can lead, you must realize that you are a leader. Before you can lead, you must realize that you are a leader. Let's go back to Genesis 37. This time we'll pick up in verse 5. It says, "Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, 'Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf.' And his brothers said to him, 'Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?' So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words." Now, we don't necessarily have dreams and visions like Joseph. But it was very clear to him, even at that young age, that he would be a leader. His dream told him that he would be the leader of his brothers. But it's also very clear from his brother's reaction that it wouldn't be right then. As if he wasn't already irritating enough to them. This dream business was taking it to another level. He's already Dad's favorite. He's spying on us to get us into trouble. And now he's getting dreams and visions that we're going to go down and bow to him. Well, that obviously went over like a lead balloon. But here's the takeaway. We are all called to lead. Our starting points are different, and how we lead will be different. But if we have the self-awareness to be able to view ourselves as leaders and to gauge whether or not we are leading, then we can make progress. See, we all know the story of Joseph. We know the heights to which he rose. But he certainly didn't make it overnight. See, developing as a leader takes time. Joseph's journey as a leader started at the age of 17, but it was well over a decade before he truly arrived as a leader. And he had many lessons to learn along the way, and so do we. So we've heard a lot of sermons and sermonettes over the last several years touching on the subject of servant leadership. And the reason why is because great leadership has its foundations in service to others. A lot of people have this idea of a leader as a boss, ordering people around, telling them what to do, how to do it, but that they get away with it because they have some extraordinary level of charisma to make other people do what they want. And there are some people that are like that, but I don't know that I would call them leaders. A great leader has learned this lesson, a lesson that Joseph also had to learn, and it's our second lesson. It's not about you. We just read about one of Joseph's dreams and his brother's reaction to it. Now let's read what happened after that. Let's look at Genesis 37, starting in verse 9. "Then he dreamed still another dream. And he told it to his brothers and said, 'Look, I've dreamed another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me.' So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, 'What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?' And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind." As if it wasn't enough to dream about having his brothers bowing down to him, now he's having a dream that his parents would as well. See, now Joseph at this point has not learned something that most of us have had to learn the hard way. With great honor comes great responsibility. See, at this point, it seems that Joseph was being rather indiscreet about sharing his dream because all he sees is the result. He sees his family bowing down to him, honoring him, but he has no idea what the path to that result is going to look like. See, we make a point of telling our kids to dream big, that they have a great destiny, that they can fulfill their dreams. It's all good. And here, God is telling Joseph the same thing. Now, the rest of chapter 37, though, tells of how Joseph was thrown into a pit and sold into slavery by his brothers. Now, that destiny of his brothers bowing down before him looks pretty far off, doesn't it? And this is where the growth process begins. See, it's easy to imagine that Joseph started to look at his dreams in a little different light, as we also should. See, here are some things that we should think about. We think about what God's plan is for our lives, but what about God's plans for our lives to impact the lives of other people? What if we viewed our lives as one of God's resources for Him to enrich the lives of others? See, these might be some questions that were starting to go through Joseph's mind at that time. See, Joseph was going from the favored son of one of the wealthiest men in the area, if not in the world at that time, to being a slave in a foreign land. It was becoming very clear that the path to the dreams that he had was going to be something far different than what he had had in mind. Let's skip ahead, and we're going to see evidence that Joseph did learn this lesson, that it's not about you. Let's go to Genesis 40. Now, Genesis 40, after being falsely accused by Potiphar's wife, Joseph is thrown into prison. And once again, he is dealing with dreams. Now, this time, Joseph hears the dreams of the baker and the butler of Pharaoh. We'll start in Genesis 40, verse 5. Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream, both of them. Each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his lord's house, saying, "Why do you look so sad today?" And they said to him, "We each have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." So Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please." See, notice here that Joseph has now learned the lesson that it's not about him. We see that unlike earlier, when we read about his earlier dreams, Joseph was focused on himself. Joseph here gives the credit to God. And we see it again in the next chapter, Genesis 41, verse 14. Genesis 41, verse 14. Now Pharaoh has had a dream, and he wants to know what it's about. It says, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon. And he shaved, changed his clothing, and he came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it." So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." Again, it wasn't about Joseph. He has learned the lesson of giving credit where it is due. There's no doubt that Joseph was a very capable and talented individual, but now he has learned the wisdom of humility. He's begun to learn that leadership, coming to that place of honor, comes through service to others, and not by making yourself the focal point. There's a great quote from Zig Ziglar. How many of you have heard of Zig Ziglar? Okay, about half of you. For those of you who don't know, he was a great sales trainer. Did trainings all over the world. One of his best known quotes touches on this idea of servant leadership. He said, "You can have everything in life you want if you will just help other people get what they want. If you make your life about them and not about you, you will end up getting far more than you would ever have imagined you would have gotten on your own." Be like Joseph. Help other people and make sure to give credit where it is due, especially when it is due to God's blessing your life. Don't make it about you. Now, here's another lesson about leadership, and it's actually two lessons that will go hand in hand. Leadership is not a popularity contest, and not everyone is going to get you. Being a leader is not about being popular or about everyone approving what you do. In fact, there's always going to be those people who question you, question your character, your integrity, your actions, your values, your priorities, and your motives. If you want proof, just read the gospel accounts. Jesus Christ is the pinnacle for us to look to as a leader, and we read over and over and over again how he was attacked in every way possible. When we follow in his footsteps, the same thing is going to happen to us. See, we are to expect it. And we're even told in Hebrews 12, verses 5 to 8, Hebrews 12, verses 5 to 8, that if we are not being chastened, if we are not being challenged in our lives and in our faith, then we should be deeply concerned. So that's where the growth comes from. Now let's go back to Joseph. If leadership is a popularity contest, like so many people like to think, then Joseph is failing pretty badly, isn't he? He ends up in a pit. Then he's sold into slavery. Then he ends up in Potiphar's house, where things start going pretty well, all things considered. Now let's go to Genesis 39, verse 2. Let's check in on Joseph. We'll see how things are going. He's now in Potiphar's household. Genesis 39, verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was, from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Now, let's consider something. We're going to read between the lines a little bit here from what we read. Something in Joseph is obviously different from the rest of the members of Potiphar's household. See, the way this is written makes it obvious that Joseph did not hide his devotion and his faith that he had in God. And this set him apart in an obvious way. Joseph worshipped a strange god. It's one that was far different from those that Potiphar and the rest of his household worshipped. This is not a way to be popular. But Potiphar also sees that God was also blessing Joseph, and that he himself was a recipient of this blessing because Joseph was part of his household. Now, Potiphar's a pretty sharp guy. He puts Joseph, a Hebrew slave that was likely one of the newest members of the household, he puts him in charge of everything, raises him up over all the other members. How do you think the rest of the staff felt about that? See, here you have some kid come in and start running everything. And people do tend to get pretty tied up in seniority at their jobs. But as we read through the chapter, we also get the sense that Joseph is focused on doing the best possible job in the circumstances that he finds himself in, following God's commandments in faith, and that God blesses him for it. See, Joseph stood out as being different. Do you stand out? Do people understand what makes you tick? When you are around other people, do they sense that you think differently from other people? They should. Because if we truly have the mind of Christ, then we are going to look at the world from a much different perspective than other people. And when that happens, sometimes they just won't get it. They won't get you. See, the servants in Potiphar's household probably thought that Joseph was a little weird. He was different in many ways. But Joseph didn't let that become a reason to stop following God and doing the best he could in the position he was in. He was going to lead. He was going to do the right thing, even if nobody else understood why, and even if doing the right thing was unpopular. Are you worried about what other people might think of you? Or are you more interested in what God thinks of you? Are you building the character to stand up, to lead, when you know that what you are saying and doing may be unpopular to others? Or that you are unpopular? These are questions for us to ponder. Sometimes when we take the stand that we must, to follow God and His Word, we will end up in a pit like Joseph. Now, it may not be a prison. We may not be sold into slavery. But we may find ourselves in circumstances that are very challenging, even depressing. See, it feels very unfair when you feel like you're being punished for something that you know is good. And it's a tremendous struggle, and it's a test of faith for us. But let's keep in mind another lesson that we can take from the life of Joseph. Pits are places of preparation. Pits are places of preparation. Let's go to Psalm 66. This is an interesting psalm for us because it's easy for us to want to focus our attention on God's great power, His mercy, His love for us, which might call the warm and fuzzy side. We see this in the first part of Psalm 66. Let's start in the first verse. It says, "Make a joyful shout to God, all the earth. Sing out the honor of His name. Make His praise glorious. Say to God, how awesome are your works." Verse 5, "Come and see the works of God. He is awesome in His doing towards the sons of men." Verse 8, "Oh, bless our God, you peoples, and make the voice of His praise to be heard, who keeps our soul among the living and does not allow our feet to be moved." Now here, though, is where the perspective shifts, and where we begin to see the lesson that is illustrated so vividly for us in the life of Joseph. Verse 10, "For you, O God, have tested us. You have refined us as silver is refined. You brought us into the net. You laid affliction on our backs. You have caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but you brought us out to rich fulfillment." See, there are plenty of places in the Bible where we see that those who would follow God must be refined, tested, developed. God knows what we need, and He knows that for many of us, we need to fall into a pit for a while. See, we wouldn't go into a pit of our own choosing. If you saw a pit coming, you'd do everything you could to go around it. Joseph didn't want to be thrown into a pit by his brothers. He didn't want to be thrown into prison later. But God also knew that there were lessons that needed to be learned by Joseph before God could use him to fulfill His purpose. See, we are quite often blind to our own worst faults. See, everybody around Joseph could see that he was proud, maybe even arrogant. He knew that he was the favored son, and from what we could read in Scripture, it appears that he had no problem letting everybody know it. And God used a couple of pit stops to teach Joseph some humility. See, God knew that Joseph would need a humble heart to be the leader that he required, and he made sure he got it. But it sure was painful. See, Joseph went from dreams of greatness to being at the bottom of a pit, thrown there by the very brothers who would bow down to him. What was going through Joseph's mind? What should go through our mind when we're in the pit? How do we get out? Well, Psalm 40. Let's turn back to Psalm 40. Psalm 40 contains some lessons for us when we are in our pits. Now, this psalm actually has two parts. The first part, verses 1 to 10, focuses on how God lifted David out of a pit. The rest of the psalm is David crying out to the Lord to deliver him from another pit. We know that even those like David who are after the heart of the Lord will have their trials, will find themselves in situations that they can't get out of by themselves. And we see what our first step needs to be in verse 1. Verse 1, I waited patiently for the Lord. So that is our first step. When you're in the pit, wait intently on the Lord. See, regardless of how we ended up in the pit in the first place, and that definitely does need to be part of what you are doing while you are waiting on the Lord, you need to be asking the questions that help you understand how you got there in the first place. Maybe the pit is poor health, loss of a job. Maybe it's a relationship problem, you know, with friends, family, or a spouse. You might be responsible for being in a pit of your own making. Or you may be the victim of wrongdoing or sin by others. And sometimes life just happens. But you are in the pit. And our first tip is not likely to be the first thing that you try in getting out of it. What most people will tend to do, at least until they are deeply converted, is that they'll be tempted to try to find their own way out of the pit. Verse 1 tells us that we need to wait patiently for the Lord. Let's continue reading Psalm 40, this time in verse 4. It speaks directly to that tendency that we have to want to do it ourselves. It says, blessed is that man who makes the Lord his trust and does not respect the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. See, there's the temptation. It's very easy. You're in the pit. You're hurting. You're feeling down. And you can get desperate to grab on to anything that you think will help you escape. Now, the proud, those are the ones mentioned here in verse 4. The proud, those are the people who believe that they have the ability to get out of their pit by themselves. See, they refuse to admit that they have faults and weaknesses. They boast in their own abilities. And that can be the start of going down to that second part, to turn aside to lies, compromise. Listening to that little voice that says, a little white lie won't hurt. Working on just one Sabbath, you know, won't matter if it means that I can keep my job. Surely God will understand. Psalm 40 says that the one who is blessed is the one who makes the Lord his trust. So that's our second tip here. While you're waiting on the Lord, stay committed to him. Trust that he will pull you from the pit. Now, you may not like the timing, but you can trust that once you're out of the pit, and then you can look back on the experience, you'll find that the timing will have been perfect. You will see that the pit was the place where God prepared you for the next chapter of your life. When we look at Joseph, we can see evidence that he did follow these tips. In Joseph's case, those pits were quite literal. He was physically restrained, first in a hole in the ground and then in a prison. And he was forced to face the fact that regardless of what his dreams had shown him, in the here and now, he was in a pit. And Joseph would simply need to wait for the Lord to open the way to freedom. It was not something that Joseph would be able to do by himself. So there's another point that I'd like to make clear here. And this speaks to leadership, and it speaks to us as Christians. When we are in a pit, we are to wait patiently on the Lord. But that does not mean that we are to simply kick back and do nothing. Christianity is active. It is what you do. Whether you are in a pit or not, you continue to work. We see that Joseph did this. In Potiphar's house, he worked. In prison, he worked. He did not simply give up and do nothing. He did not just sulk and bewail his situation. He made the best of the situation that he found himself in, even though it wasn't of his own choosing. He lived according to his understanding of God's way of life, and he trusted that God would lead him where he needed to go when it was time. God would open the door when the time was ready. His job, our job, is to be ready to walk through the door when it does open. Now, in my study of great leaders, there's almost always times in their lives where they went through at least one major struggle, a giant pit, but they stayed the course and eventually came out the other side. So if those without God's Spirit can do it, then what excuse do we have? Now we're still in Psalm 40. Let's start at the beginning. It says, I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined to me and heard my cry. He also brought me up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my steps. He has put a new song in my mouth, praise to our God. Many will see it in fear and will trust in the Lord. Verse 3 tells us what we need to do when God does lift us up out of our pit. We need to thank God, to praise him for his help in pulling us out of the pit and for the lessons that we learned while we were in it. The second part of verse 3 gives us something else to ponder. When others see you in the pit and they see how you are handling it, what is it that they see? Will they see someone trusting in God to see them through, making the best of the situation that you find yourself in? People will notice. Let's turn to Genesis 41, verse 50. We will see that Joseph did not ignore this tip. He did give honor and praise to God. Genesis 41, verse 50. After God had lifted him out of the pit, Joseph had learned those valuable lessons of humility, patience, and more. We read Genesis 41, verse 50. And to Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Brethren, we're called to be leaders. God has called us to be kings and priests. These are important positions of leadership. And we need to be constantly thinking about what we are doing in our lives to prepare for that responsibility. The Bible contains so many stories and teachings about leadership, and the life of Joseph is one of the best, and today we're just scratching the surface of the lessons that we can learn from his life. But how does someone go from a pit to the pinnacle? How does one accomplish the title of the sermon, The Rise of a Leader? We see part of the process in today's lessons. Before you can lead, you must realize that you are a leader. See, no matter your current position, you are a leader. We have all the tools that we need to learn to use in serving our fellow man and each other. It's not about you. Effective leadership comes from a heart of service to others. If we are always focused on us and what we want, others are going to see that, and they're not going to follow you. Leadership is not a popularity contest, and not everyone's going to get you. Leadership is hard, because it means that you sometimes need to take the less traveled road, and that's going to ruffle feathers. People won't understand why you're doing what you do, and they might even attack you for it. But a real leader will stay the course. And that Pits are places of preparation. Nobody likes being in a pit. But leaders recognize that there are lessons to be learned while you're there. Just this morning during my Bible reading, I read Proverbs 15, verse 31. It says, "The ear that hears the rebukes of life will abide among the wise." As Christians, when we are in the pit, we need to hear the rebukes of life. We need to learn the lessons, and we need to trust that God will show the way out of the pit when the timing is right. And when he does, we need to thank him not only for the deliverance that he gives us, but for those lessons that we learn and the character that we build when we are in that pit. So throughout Joseph's life, we see the rise of a leader. I will leave you with this question. Do others see the rise of a leader in you?